Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills. Although I know Buhner prefers the garlic. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And proud to be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sandy Barber's press conference later in the show today. Charles Davis on the show today. Looking forward to that. We've got Austin Gale on the NFL draft coming up on Monday from Pro Football Focus. It looks like we're on track to get Charlie Casserly on the show, the former Redskins general manager, now doing extensive work with NFL Network. So it looks like we're on track to do that. So, yeah, we're already planning in the next week. And, of course, the NFL draft is, 3 weeks from today will be rounds 2 and 3. And what will be a anticipated and, I think, highly viewed NFL draft. I think there'll be a lot of people watching the NFL draft this year. Because they're going to sit there and say, my goodness, that's a live event? Really? I think I'll watch a live event. What about you? Yeah. I know Matt's looking forward to it. He already has a list of Eagles picks that they should be making, and he strongly recommends them making.
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to start with a wide receiver. Yeah, which is fine. There's a lot of them in the draft. You're good. That's why they didn't need to sign one in free agency. There's so many, what appears to be on the surface, quality NFL-ready wide receivers in this draft. And you don't have to just get one in round one. You can get them in rounds 2 and 3. That's how many there are. This was something I mentioned about when K.J. Hamler came out. I said the one thing about K.J. Hamler, I know he's talented, he's really fast, I know that. But I said my only question about him coming out now was the depth of draft at the wide receiver spot. And we're going to talk with Austin Gale about that. Austin, in fact, just interviewed K.J. Hamler for Pro Football Focus. And we'll get his impressions. I always find it interesting when somebody else that doesn't really know him interviews him, or any player that obviously I know and have talked to. I was interested to find out what their viewpoint of him is, because obviously the window that they have to talk to them is limited. And it's always interesting what kind of impression they get in the limited window.
I love K.J. Hamler. Not only that, too, Steve, does he have his speed as a pure receiver, and he has great hands and all that. Special teams. It's always big with anybody who's going to be drafted in basically rounds 2 through 7. And obviously K.J. Hamler brings that, both punt and kick return.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a big... Look, versatility in this league is critical. It's critical. If you can... And I mean, look at Stefan Wisniewski. Stefan Wisniewski has kept his career alive because he's been versatile enough. It's made a big difference. Oh, it's so good to hear Dick and Milton. Dick, how are you today? I hope you are well and your family and friends are well.
We're good, but this might not be as good a news, and maybe you know this, but Jimmy Sotos entered the portal this morning, obviously maybe Bucknell's best basketball player returning. And he's going into his senior year, so I'm not sure why somebody would leave, but there again, maybe you have a comment or an opinion on that. And secondly, the other thing you might want to comment on, and I'm sure you know this, that the NCAA has really cut back on the amount of funding for Division I, II, and III athletics next for this coming season.
Yep.
And yesterday afternoon, Old Dominion dropped their wrestling team, and they were pretty good. I mean, a relatively decent wrestling team. So I'm not sure where this is going to go, and, you know, is this the start of something that's going to happen all over the country in college athletics? I just wonder your comment. Maybe you don't want to comment on Sotos. It's true. I mean, I read it online. No. He actually put a Twitter. I don't do that kind of stuff. But he actually had a real nice comment on his page today about how good he was to play at Bucknell, but he's moving on.
Let me give you a tough.
I mean, Spears one thing. He was a decent coming off the bench guy, but Sotos is basically was going to be the team leader. So.
Well, I'll make an in general comment about that, and this is in general. And I've used this example a few times. So often you'll get a player that is under the radar. I mean, I'm talking about nationally. All right, Dick? Yeah. So he's nationally under the radar. You know, he's not the five-star guy that everybody's trying to get or the four-star guy. And then they get to a particular school. And it may not be a Power 5 school or a high mid-major. And suddenly, they get there, and guess what? In the transition from high school to college, they're a better player than a lot of people realized. Which then leads us to number two. You go to a school like Bucknell where you're really well coached, and Nathan's a really good coach. And they take that really good player that was under the radar, who's probably better than people realize, and they make them even better. So then, who comes a-calling? The Power 5 guys. And the Power 5 guys who missed the first time are looking around saying, okay, who can help my team? Oh, you know what? He's got a track record. I like it. He's really good. And that's what's been happening over and over again, Dick, in college basketball. I've used the example of Andrew Rousey several times, but I'll use it again. Rousey is a good, undersized, outstanding shooter, smart offensive player that comes out and goes to UNC Wilmington. Well, at UNC Wilmington, he scores 1,000 points. In 2 years, he scores 1,000 points. And then he looks around and says, you know, I think I might be able to do better than this. Well, he can. He goes to Marquette. And at Marquette, guess what? He scores 1,000 points for them in 2 years. And that's what's happening over and over again, is that the power programs are looking at some of these other programs, and when they miss on somebody in recruiting, they then go and get them later once they see how they have developed on this level. So you're right, that is an issue, no question. Now let's get to the money part. The money part is a big issue. There's no question about that. What happened was the NCAA took out an insurance policy on the tournament for this year. Look, there is not a single athletic department that is losing a dime right now on spring sports. I mean, you don't generate any revenue in the spring. You just don't. Nobody does. And, I mean, maybe a couple of SEC baseball teams get a couple bucks in there, but that's about it. You are losing money on any, you know, you don't have as many scholarships and so forth in the spring. But what you have now is a situation where the NCAA tournament revenue, the insurance policy came in, and the distribution is going to be, instead of $600 million, $270 million. So that obviously is below the 50% threshold of distribution. People were counting on X amount coming in. They're not going to get X amount coming in, which then brings us to the next part. And the next part is going to be trying to somehow guess how the fall is going to be. You know, you're hoping that your football program fills the seats and brings enough people in. This is what you're hoping. And that makes a difference financially for everything else. And what may happen here is that you may have a reevaluation by not every athletic department, by some athletic departments, as to how many sports they can comfortably carry in the next 2 to 5 years. And they may look at a program and say, we comfortably can't carry that program. And in Old Dominion's case, it sounds like they made that decision on wrestling. And that is going to be, in wrestling terms, what they'll have to, quote, grapple with, the finances of carrying a non-revenue sport. You know, I'm talking about one that can break even. And of course, wrestling's always going to be in the tough spot, too, as it doesn't help you Title IX-wise. And so now you start having some tough decisions that are being made because the financial line is closer than people realize, and it does tell you that your idea of paying athletes on the college level would not be a smart idea either.
If you were guessing, would you think that this is just the start of something that's going to happen over the whole country in Division I sports, especially with mid-majors more than the bigger schools, maybe?
Yeah, I think it has to be a concern, Dick. It does. It's not this upcoming year. It's what is the budget going to look like a year from now? Are you going to have the ability to make up for it? And let's get to the people in the stands. All right, you may have how comfortable is everybody going to be in 2021 going to a football game? Well, hopefully at that point a vaccine is developed and people are ultra comfortable in doing it. But then again, what's everybody's economic situation, which was flowing like honey a month ago, and right now you've got people struggling to make ends meet because they're furloughed, unemployed. Small businesses are struggling right now. Restaurant, I mean, you know, what businesses come back, what don't. So there's a lot of questions on the economic side. And let's face it, I mean, when you have programs that can't pay for themselves, then they become obviously vulnerable, like it is in any company. As I've always used the Ford Lincoln Mercury example, right? Why isn't there Mercury anymore? Well, the Mercury line is not there anymore because for Ford Lincoln Mercury, it was the least profitable line. So they just concentrated on Ford and Lincoln. And in a business, sometimes you make that decision, and usually universities don't make that decision like that. Universities are based on, you know, in terms of how they, and just like most sports are based on socialism. So the Green Bay Packers get the exact same cut as the New York Giants on the TV contract. And they try to do the same thing in college sports as well, where they try to take two major programs like football and men's basketball and distribute the money in such a way where you can have broad-based programs. The question going forward financially will be, how broad-based can you be?
You know the Big Ten, and I don't know who all's left on their basketball team, but I do know this only because he's been around for 3 years. And, of course, you talked about Jimmy Sodas with Nathan more than one time on your interview.
Sure.
But I do
yeah.
know that one of his final choices for school was Northwestern, and he's a Chicago kid, so I don't know if that's going to enter into it or not.
Let me put it this way. He is the kind of player that would help Chris. Chris is a good guy. It's a great university, obviously, just like Bucknell's a great university. He would fit in pretty well with what they're doing there. That's just my opinion.
Well, actually, I don't know their personnel as far as who's there, who's not there, who's leaving, who's around, who graduates. So I guess that's my point. So, and I do know that was one of his final schools. It wasn't a secret around down at Bucknell. So, well, anyhow, and by the way, nobody gets 6 foot apart in Beaver Stadium. I'm gonna let you go at that. You don't get that 6 foot leeway there. Not even going in the door.
Yeah, I know. I've got you.
They
are so right about that.
They tailgate a lot closer than that.
Yes, they do, and you are right about that. Yeah, I'm just
okay.
I'll let you go.
Thanks a lot. That's my things for the day. Thank you.
Hey, that was beautiful, Dick. Thanks. Appreciate that. Really good questions. Really good questions. And I mean, we'll hear from Sandy Barber at 4:06 today. I mean, financially, I think there's going to be another part too when it comes to universities, and that's the donation part. You know, like I said, the economy was rolling around pretty well You know? And so maybe you had a couple extra bucks of disposable income, or maybe you wanted to make a donation because, tax return-wise, it's good, plus it's what you really want to do. Now does money become tighter and decisions become tighter? There's so much that goes into this.
Now, Steve, Sandy did say, and she'll get into this more when we have her on our press conference later, that the athletic department itself is good for fiscal year 20, but she said the concern starts with 2021 and beyond when she was asked about that.
That's exactly what I said to Dick, almost verbatim. I said, look, this coming year, financially, their athletic departments should be okay across the board. The question is, what happens in fiscal year 21-22? Because, what's the attendance like in stadiums? What's the attendance like in arenas? You still do have, if you're a Power 5 conference, you still are backed up by TV contracts.
And, of course, if there is attendance at games.
Well, but she said today, look, they're not playing in empty stadiums.
Right. And other schools
in other words, if it's not safe enough for the student body to be on campus, then it's not safe enough for the student athlete to be there.
Right. It makes total sense.
Right. If it's not safe enough for the fans, well, is it safe for the student athlete? I mean, it's fewer people to check, obviously. One of the nicest guys on the planet's coming up next. Charles Davis. We've had him on the show before. You meet him. If you meet him and you don't like him, then you don't like people. Right? Next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by not only a great professional, but one of the nicest guys in any business, and that is Charles Davis. Charles, welcome, and I just want to preempt by saying that our mutual friends, Tom and Julie McGrath, wanted me to say hi to you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. You please give them my best. I hope that they, you and your family, and everyone who can hear our voices are all safe and healthy and I'm continuing to stay that way during this incredible pandemic we're all going through right now. I know we're all going to be touched by it in some form or another, but we can all hope that that doesn't happen.
And we hope you and your family and friends are doing well, Charles.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, please give Tom and Julie my absolute best. They're the greatest.
They are the greatest. They really are. Okay, Charles, let's start with this. The NFL has kept business as usual.
Yeah.
And they can. They can because they're in the, quote, off season.
Great point.
So when you look at how they've conducted business to this point, What have you thought about the way the NFL's gone about doing almost business as usual?
I feel like they've done a pretty darn good job of it, Steve. And I know that when it all started, we all, and rightly so, had concerns about it. And I think a lot of it is, what's that word that we're using now to the point of overuse? Optics.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
I think our teachers and our parents used to say, yeah, but how does that look? Now we call it optics, right? We always advance it. I think that, you know, initially when it all started, the biggest concern, as I saw it and I kept hearing, was how are we going to roll out in free agency these contracts that these guys are going to sign for, and the amounts of money when people are losing jobs, not knowing if they get their next paycheck, what's going to happen to their life savings. Right on down the line, right? And it made perfect sense. And I think what we discovered along the way is, yes, there is an element of that, but there's also a bigger element of people wanting this to happen, liking hearing about it, taking their minds off of things. And I'm not trying to oversell it by any stretch, but think of it this way. The movie-making business never shut down during World War II, during the Depression, during, you know, all those things, the stock market crash at 20... We know these people make more money. We get it. But the entertainment that they provide, that's how we offset a lot of things. And maybe that's trite. I don't mean it to be. But that's kind of how I'm reading this, because I was waiting to see the country kind of go, whoa, what are you guys doing? Who cares? You know, what? Right. He's making $80 million? Not now. And I have not heard that to a loud measure. I've heard people talk about it. Maybe we shouldn't do this, and that makes perfect sense. It's something that should be debated. But all in all, I feel like the fans are okay with it and happy that it's going, because your point stands from the beginning, Steve. The NFL can do this because it is off-season. If they had been on the field, they'd be off the field just like the NHL's off the ice, the NBA's off the court. Wimbledon's not going to be played. The PGA Tour is shut down. The NFL would be shut down the exact same way. But since it's off season, you can conduct business, and you can doing it the right way too. Social distancing, you know, conference calls, video chats, all those things, without us doing the wrong thing, we can still try and flatten the curve even while business is being conducted.
Exactly. You can still do it because you can make deals from your home and so forth. Which then brings me to the money part, Charles, which you brought up, which is interesting. Because we're so used to seeing dollar amounts like this for professional athletes anyway, do you feel like the fan has become desensitized to the number? All they care about is the location where the player ends up?
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't know that they've been desensitized to the number, because if the player doesn't perform, what's the first thing that gets hurled back at him or her?
Oh, you're right about that. You are right about that, because they say, oh, we're paying $50 million for this?
Which is so true, right? So in other words, hey, cool, you're going to get signed for that, but you better play to that level or we're going to let you know about that. That's how the fan is still involved that way. In other words, if we're going to shell out our hard-earned shekels to go watch you perform and you're not, whammo, right? Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you've been. Some of the greatest performers we've ever seen in our lifetime have gotten booed because their performance hasn't been up to snuff, and a lot of that is due to contract. If you sign for big money, you better play to that level, and that will always be true, I believe.
Yeah, that will always be true, but I just feel like right now the initial signing is great. We got this guy.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. People are happy about that. When Reggie Jackson signed with the Yankees, no one really freaked out over the contract until Reggie started striking out in April and May.
Then, six months from now, it becomes an issue.
Right? But when Reggie hit three in the World Series to clinch another title, he was just Mr. October. No one mentioned that money again. So it goes in ebbs and flows that way. But right now, hey, if you're happy with that signing, you're good as a fan. But if that player all of a sudden doesn't play to that level, they'll hear about it if we're on the field come September.
Now, Charles, the NFL draft, of course, is coming up, and of course, you're actively involved in that. You know that general managers, player personnel people, because this is a big investment that they're making. want to know as much as possible. How much of a setback, if any, is there, is that a lot of players didn't have pro days, didn't have that additional time to run a 40, something like that. How does that change the dynamics of this draft, in your opinion?
Well, I think for the teams that run everything through general manager, player personnel director, scouts, meaning they get the bulk of conversation in the draft room, in the analysis. In other words, the coaches always get a say, but teams that are really led by GM, scouts, what have you, where most of that sway goes, they will actually have a little bit more of an advantage. And the reason I say that is because that's their job and that's what they do every day. In other words, they have books and dossiers on these kids. Let's say they're third-year guys coming out of college, right? They've got either 2 years of play on them if they're redshirts, or 3 years of play if they're juniors. If they're seniors, they've got 4 years. They've got full books on these guys up to, you know, the point we had to kind of rein it in. But those teams that really rely heavily on their coaches and their opinions, like the Bengals, are big on that because they don't have a huge scouting staff. So they will bring the coaches in starting in January. Well, if you've gone through an NFL season, Steve, these coaches are not spending Saturdays watching college football. Okay, no. They're spending Saturdays trying to win their game on Sunday or Monday. So when it gets turned over to them in January, they are just catching up on these guys. And that's why I think those teams may be at a little bit of a disadvantage. Cincinnati is one of those teams, but they'll get it mitigated by this. They coached in the Senior Bowl this year. So they got to win with those kids there, and that helps out. But my point being, if you those teams that scout like crazy and they run the draft, I think they have a little more information than those teams that really rely heavily on coaches because they're playing catch-up, and that really will be incomplete information for them.
It's interesting. I think there were two NFL teams. One of them was the Rams. I can't recall the other one. It may have been the Broncos that did not send assistant coaches to the combine.
Yeah, I think
but
you're
are
correct.
They, are they organizations that are more GM scout-centric to begin with?
They are, but that wasn't as much. That's not as much of an issue, frankly, Steve. All 32 could do the exact same thing because of the television.
See, the television
has changed that in a big way because there's not a single 40-yard dash that guys run that don't get televised. And you get all the numbers of what they do anyway. Do you actually need to see a guy bench it 32 times, or do you just need to know that he benched it 32 times?
Right.
You know, that's what that comes down to. Now, some of the on-field stuff, you do want to see how a guy moves. You do want to see if there's fluidity. You do want to see if he has that bend. You want to see those sorts of things. But in most years, what you count on is, if you don't see it there, you'll catch it at their pro day. You'll catch it in an individual workout. This year has made that a little bit different, obviously, because those things got shut down.
Is there a position that you're looking at in particular that really intrigues you in this draft, or is it more looking at a couple of individual players that intrigue you?
For me, Steve, you know, we're all locked in on what positions are the strongest, what are the weakest, what's going on here, what's going on there. But the way the NFL game is played, when you boil it down, it's no different than Bear Bryant said, than Bum Phillips coined the same phrase when he was in the NFL. A football game and oftentimes comes down to protect ours, meaning can you pass protect for your quarterback, and rush theirs. Can you get pressure on their quarterback?
Yep.
This year's draft is really devoid of edge rushers, you know, those guys that we're used to getting, those defensive ends, outside linebackers that come from the outside and beat up quarterbacks. We don't have a ton of them. In fact, a case can be made that when the first round is over, we may have three that would be pure defensive ends, outside linebackers that could go in the first round. And that's a number that's usually much higher. The pressure comes from the inside guys this year, the defensive tackles. You know, that's where that's going to come from, and don't sneeze at that, because that inside pressure in a quarterback's face is huge and it's vital. But we're really used to having those guys who can fly off the edge, but just not many of them. And it'll be interesting to see how they either come off the draft board and how they're used, because A.J. Epenesa from Iowa is a big, strong, physical defensive end. I'm just wondering if he'll be better as a defensive tackle in the NFL as opposed to an edge rusher. because the number one edge rusher is Chase Young out of Ohio State, then you go a long time before you think about who's number two.
Right. No, there's, I mean, and as somebody who's broadcast games with both Epinesa and Young, obviously quality guys. Another guy that falls into the category but not quite there with them is Yetur Gross-Matos of Penn State,
yep,
who did in certain pass situations play some defensive tackle.
Yep. Yep, and I love him because he's a willowy type guy. I think he's much more suited overall to be an edge guy. In fact, I got a chance to meet him at the Combine, and I asked him that question, and he didn't even hesitate. And he talks about being on the edge. He thought that's where he was suited best, what was best for him. And he's going to be a guy that's going to get first-round mention, and he could easily go in the first round. Some of that is a product of pushing up because we don't have many edge rushers. Okay,
that's
and
right.
Some teams will see a screaming need. He's a good football player. I would guess that if we went into most draft rooms, most people would have a second-round grade on him, but they wouldn't be averse to take him in the first round in certain situations. That's why I think once we get into the 20s in the draft, Steve, I would look for his name to possibly pop up.
Yeah, I agree with that, Charles. I think that's exactly right. A guy that didn't get a chance to run a 40, but I do know his time is and he's talked about it being a 4.27 guy, is a guy like KJ Hamler. When you look at his size in today's game, with all the NFL games that you do, we see Tyreek Hill and what he does. Can he be that kind of player on the NFL level?
I don't think there's any question he can be. Yes, he absolutely can be, because you're seeing how much of a space game it's become. It's so funny.
Yeah.
All those years, Steve, that we grew up where the colleges played a certain way and the NFL played another way, and the NFL really dug in their heels about not doing it the way the colleges do it, that's been wiped away to a great extent. Now, we don't play the game the same way because of the hash marks. With the hash marks being in the middle of the field, there is no real wide side, short side. It's almost the same all the time for the NFL. But you can still space out the field, find open gaps for your guys, and they turn them into bigger plays. And Hamler is one of those players that's going to benefit from that. And his ability to run, to shake free, catch the football and turn it into bigger plays. The biggest question people have with him is they've seen some drops on tape, and they want to know why. Are they concentration drops? Do we need to get his eyesight checked? You know, what's going on with that? But all in all, he's going to be a guy that, again, there may be some team in the first round that really, really loves him. I say day two, second round, he'll be off the board somewhere making plays, and he's going to be a guy that's going to be effective.
And finally, Charles, you know, if you're going to talk about the draft, you always have to mention the quarterback component in this. I mean, Ryan Tannehill just cashed in pretty big with the Tennessee Titans.
Yes, he did.
So when you look at the quarterback component in this, who do you think are worthy first-round picks in the NFL? I mean, somebody may end up in the first round but is not a worthy first-round guy. Who do you think are worthy first-round picks among quarterbacks, and why?
Yeah, I think Burrow. I think that's pretty simple. I won't spend a lot of time on that. I think Tua, you know, health. Again, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on that. Justin Herbert, to me, has shown himself as worthy as a first-round guy. I thought his postseason has been dynamic, starting with the Pac-12 championship game, Rose Bowl, into the Senior Bowl. Thought he's been tremendous. Jordan Love, if he came out a year before, people wouldn't be nitpicking his game quite the same way. And that's where I stop with quarterbacks in the first round.
Okay. Charles,
Jordan Love
absolute
from Utah
pleasure.
State, by the way.
Utah, exactly right. Yep, Utah State. Charles, it is an absolute pleasure, as always. Appreciate your time very much, and appreciate the great work you do.
Steve, thanks for having me again, as always. You take care, and everyone who can hear our voices, please take care, stay safe, and give Tom and Julie my best, please.
I absolutely will. Thanks so much, Charles. Charles Davis joining us. You see him on Fox. You'll see him on the NFL Network with what they're doing with the draft. And I think, as Matt knows, because Matt is setting up guests, he's not I think he does a great broadcast all the time.
Absolutely.
There cannot be a nicer guy in this business than him.
I totally agree. He's great to work with.
As a person. He's just a great person. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. They're open. Now, soft drinks, snacks, water. They've got it. And they also have wine coolers. They also have, along the way, peanuts that they roast fresh and hot every day. The pickle bar is second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sandy Barber's teleconference next half hour. She'll talk about where everything stands and some of the thought process with intercollegiate athletics. And, of course, many want to know about football. Financially, it sounds like the numbers are okay for the coming fiscal year. The question is going to be what happens, all right, beyond the next fiscal year. Now, you're hoping that in terms of the beyond the next fiscal year means that you can count on, for example, NCAA tournament money, which is huge. So, by the way, a video conference is next week, Matt. I think two that we'd like to pick up next week to have on the show for next week. How about Kirk Sciarca, the new offensive coordinator?
Absolutely.
I think that'd be a pretty good one, huh?
A lot to ask Tim with Banks. Him.
And then Tim Banks. Tim's safeties and co-defensive coordinator. So, yeah. That'll be next week. And Kirk is not only the offensive coordinator, he is the quarterback's coach as well. I thought Dick in his call brought up several really interesting points. I mean, things that we have talked about before, but it's the Power Five schools and the high mid-major. What they're seeing are really good players develop at other levels of college basketball. And I'll give you one. Patrick Tape of Columbia. Patrick Tape of Columbia, who's played against Penn State, so I've seen Patrick Tape play in person. He's a good player. He actually committed to playing at Duke, the transfer from Columbia, and then he withdrew it. Now, why he did, I don't know. So we'll see where he ends up. But you notice who's going after these players when they put their name in there. They're all the Power Five schools.